Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt, the Bud Knight.
And I am Sir Ezra, the Watchful. Friends, welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are talking about your comments. We have tons. Yes,
as we have so many. And, you know, we love Follow Up Friday. And I want to, we're saying we want to do this more often, where we dive back into your guys' comments, because you guys are leaving so many great comments on YouTube, and it sort of works as a way to just talk a bunch of theories and all sorts of stuff. So, nonetheless, here we go. So this was on our big, this was Will Sansa marry Aegon Targaryen here. So here's another one from Lady Ashley of Noth. Oh, actually, that was a response to her video. Well, you're getting another one. Why? Because she's like the comment queen.
Oh, yes, she is.
Over on the YouTube. So so here she goes. So she's saying, that was so cool, guys. You know, thank you for reading my comment. And the idea was, you know, will Sansa end up marrying young Griff? She says, you know, I 100% agree with you guys that telling Kevin Lannister the truth, right, as he's getting ready, you know, to die, as he's invested in false Aegon's success, as he said he was. My tinfoil theory, though, is that while Varys may have been talking to Kevin, the message was actually for somebody else, the raven that had been perched on the windowsill. After Varys shoots Kevin Lannister, we're told it flew up, but nothing more. It could have been somewhere else in the room or hovering outside the open window. In any case, I suspect Blood Raven was in that bird, and Varys used Kevin to relay a message about false Aegon, because Blood Raven was the single biggest impediment to every previous Blackfyre rebellion. And now that he's stuck thousands of miles away, there's not a damn thing he'll be able to do about this one. Nor could Blood Raven have seen it coming, because it was orchestrated beyond his reach in Essos. There's no evidence of Weirwoods there. So this could be a good way of Varys saying checkmate. So she goes on a little bit more, but I think we'll just start with that part right there.
I actually really like this. And the idea that Blood Raven was, again, putting these Blackfyre rebellions down, using sort of, you know, him being fluent in maybe some of the dark arts, some glamour stuff, like he has some magical ability. Varys, especially in the show, they hint at this a lot. He's very anti-magic and power, and he's more into just modern day, like he is a spy master. He's a trickster, aware of many different faces and masks. So this would be kind of really cool. He's almost that, like, I don't know how to explain it. Like he's of a lower, not really lower class, but he's like almost of like a working class, and really just wanted to do things for the realm. And he does it over in Essos. He starts these plots and stuff. And this is something that, you know, kind of, he's gonna, as she said, say checkmate in the end here, and finally got it. Finally did it for the family. Finally got the Blackfyres to sit on the throne and got a seat at the table more so. I think that's a great idea.
Yes. You know? Yeah. 100%. I agree. Yeah. You know, it is interesting because I think, you know, we kind of forget in the show because this show some sort of taints our view. Remember, like the whole deal about Varys and what happened with him. Right. Remember, he was like became a eunuch. And there was like, you know, perhaps magic involved.
Right.
In the show, we see the other. What is her name? Is it Kinvarna? Is
that her name? Yeah, Kinvara or something like that.
Kinvara. Yeah, the other red priestess that we see for like one episode. Right. You know, she like says something to Varys, like whispers it in his ear, and then we never really saw what she said to him. But it like obviously, I mean, it like scares Varys,
right?
Yeah, so you know, again, take that with a grain of salt because it's a show, but perhaps, you know, something that George told them, but obviously that character doesn't exist, but it could have, he could have said, you know, maybe it's Melisandre that says something to him later. Well, right. Maybe it's something else, but it still just ties into the character that maybe there is something going on with magic that Varys doesn't like. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting. You know, this is a season six character, right? So Kinvara, a red priest, one of the high ranking leaders in the faith of R'hllor. And I want to go look, like, is she a substitute for like other red priests or priestesses, you know, that the show was like, yeah, we need to feature a female or we need to, I don't understand. You know, like there were other Slick Mokoro and stuff. It's like, why didn't they go with someone like that? You already had Melisandre. It's just interesting that they've made this character up and you wonder like, okay, is she gonna come up in the series? Is this someone who we just haven't met yet in the actual book series and George gave this to them or what? Because yeah, she's very involved with Varys and you feel like there's it helps to amplify his resentment towards magic. You know, it's like when he converses with her, it's like, okay, you understand this guy threw things into the flames and he's like seeing all this and he's freaked out by all of it and he was assaulted and everything. It's just awful, you know, and it's just like a crazy story inside of the movie or the TV verse that's not there in the books yet. And it's just like, did they just make that up or is it,
you know? or are we going to meet more red priestesses in Winds of Winter? Right. As magic begins to get expanded. I do think that whether we meet more red priestesses or not, I think certainly what's going on in Old Town is going to be expanded more. And just the we will see more magic and more magic users in Winds of Winter and the, you know, Dream of Spring, if we ever get it. I mean, we're still waiting on Winds, obviously. But I do think we will begin to see more red priestesses, I'm guessing, right? And more R'hllor. I mean, if this whole thing is supposed to come down to a battle of ice and fire, I would imagine we would see some more.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I mean, what the known red priest in the book series, I have him here. We've got like Banero, the high priest of R'hllor from Volantis. Thoros is there. We've seen Thoros quite a bit. Mokoro called the Black Flame. He's on the crew with Victarion Greyjoy. Melisandre of Ashai called the Red Woman. She counsels Stannis. Let's see here. There's another one in Braavos that passes by. It's like, I can't even pronounce it. As Ezzelino, maybe, okay, is what it is. And then Kinvara is TV only. They have it listed here as TV only. So yeah, they're human beings. And like other human beings, they vary greatly. And that's what George's quote kind of on the Red Priest, that they're human beings. And just like other human beings, they vary greatly in their maybe approach to R'hllor and their dedication, what they see in the flames. Like there's that human element that George explores and says, yeah, we're human. And so you make mistakes. Like Melisandre is at first, when she comes in, this bigger deal. And we're like, holy shoot, she's got powers. She can like withstand a poisoning. She can see stuff. She's birthing shadow babies. Like she has real power. But then you see the flaws, the human side, the interpretation, the fears or whatever. And so I just think it's really interesting to see how Varys is going to be, you know, in contrast to them, he like this whole plot, he's familiar with R'hllor and all the magic and stuff over there. That's something that's kind of like migrated over to Westeros. It's kind of new, you know?
Yeah. An argument being made here is that Kinvara replaces Banero and Mokoro.
Yeah. Okay.
Was her role.
Yeah. Gotcha. And I just wondered, because yeah, look at Mokoro. I was like, man, if they brought a guy like that in, that would have been very interesting and would have showed sort of another side to, you know, it's just interesting they used Kinvara. So she's right, great.
She is cool for her little time on the show. Maybe they just, my guess is, if you want my real answer, my guess is they are like, we're going to bring in another, you know, attractive female to attend to get more viewers. I mean, in all honesty, that's probably number one, why they did it. And then number two is she looks like, I think it's easier to show somebody that also looks like Melisandre. Because we've already been introduced to Melisandre, we have, you know, somebody like Mokoro, if you brought that guy in like that on the show, it'd be like, what's going on here? This is like way different.
Well, yeah, you're almost wondering whether they're part of the same faith or like, it's very easy to see they're wearing the same garb. And so
right.
I think for your mainstream audience, you come in, you're like, okay, yeah, I get it. I know I don't have to think much about Kinvara. I just know she's another duplicate of Melisandre, you know. And if you had somebody else who's dressed slightly differently, like, okay, is he from a different sect in the culture or the religion, or what, you know? Because he does have, he's got the tattoos, he's got all sorts of
right.
you know, crazy features, and they wouldn't have had to do that necessarily. But yeah, it's just so you wonder now then if she replaces someone like Mokoro or whatever, is then he going to be in opposition to Varys? I mean, he's on his way. He's right outside. He's about to have a big interaction with Daenerys. And Kinvara in the show was very much preaching that Daenerys is this person, you know, like almost in opposition to Melisandre. Like, it's all like they have their horse in a race that they're backing, you know? And Stannis is Melisandre's horse until Jon Snow shows up. And then Kinvara in the show is like, you know, Daenerys is all about pushing Daenerys forward. It's like, they got to get on the same page. They should be communicating through the flames and figuring stuff out, because you guys are selling us on two different heroes here.
Now, now I guess we'll tie it back into the Blood Raven thing here. Does Varys know, hey, think Raven? I don't know. Maybe. I guess could he, in theory, could he, you know, would, I'm sure he knows who Blood Raven is. Now that would have to tie into him being a secret Blackfyre and just assuming not being, Varys would be not trusting of any Raven, Thousand Eyes and One.
Right.
If that is sort of the case, then, right. But I mean, it is interesting that Varys does say that to Kevin as he's getting ready to kill him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and it's words that either, so with George, and I like Ashley's comment, it's like for us, but if you pay close attention and there's something else there in the room, like if there was no one and no mention of anything else, then it's sort of like, what's he gonna do later? Say there was one of the little birds was inside the wall that wasn't working for Varys or something, you know? That's kind of weird. Because any of those little like the little spies inside the keep are like tied to him, you know. So it's like, yeah, if there's a raven there or whatever that could be listening, that's intentional. You put that there as a device, whether he uses it or not. Like, George at least set up a way to say, okay, I can tie this back. And this is, again, how Blood Raven and Bran can use the Weirwood network and then see things through Raven's eyes and all that kind of stuff to gather and have information, you know, because that's a big leap. It's like, Varys seems to know a lot, but then we find out he's very human and is limited in his network. Whereas like Bran and Blood Raven are tapping into magical powers, and it's like, hey, whose network, who has a better network, a better scheme, a better plan? What are the limitations to both? You have to have limitations to some degree. So
yeah,
it's a good comment.
Yeah, it's a great comment. Okay, shifting gears here, and we're just gonna be kind of jumping around to a lot of different comments here on YouTube, just so we can kind of talk about things. So we did a video. It was kind of our April Fool's video, but then we actually had a really sort of fun discussion on it about Moon Boy, and actually got some interesting comments on here. And the topic was, did Cersei actually sleep with Moon Boy? Because Tyrion says it to Jaime, but then Jaime reflects on it quite a bit, and then Moon Boy actually pops up, so you can go check out that video on our YouTube, and we also did a podcast on it as well. But here we go. So some comments here. Anyone else think that Moon Boy is actually from House Dane? Keeping an eye on the council slash king on behalf of the Dornish folk who raised Jon Snow for the first year of his life, knowing that he was actually secretly the royal Targaryen. Are we sure that Gerald Dane isn't Moon Boy? Evidence points to him being of the night. So I was actually kind of, I had never heard this theory, but we had more than one comment on it. And so I was like, okay, maybe this is something people are actually, I've mm-hmm. never heard that theory. Right. Okay, I definitely don't think he's Gerald Dane. Cause
yeah, I don't
feel like they would recognize him, but yeah. Of House Dane, there are a lot of unnamed people from that house.
Well, it's interesting, and whatever George was going to do with House Dane and this whole, you know, gap that he was going to have and aging up Ned Dane, you know, things that he might have been trying and shifted gears. Maybe Moon Boy does somehow play into that, because we said he's athletic, he's acrobatic. He's not what you think when you think of a classic fool. Like, he's very strapping, very, you know, they say he's got like this moon face, whatever, like round face or whatever, but still he's doing backflips all over the place. I don't care what you say.
I think he's doing a lot more than that. I think he's doing Cersei
I think he is. Well, and also to kind of catch her eye, the whole point of that conversation too, it was meant to be kind of a joke, but at the same time it got serious, because Jaime literally, and we talked about it with Khaleesi, Jaime actually thinks a lot about that whole situation. So I think he actually did. So he's at least attractive enough or whatever to catch Cersei's eye and be in her bed. I think it's like confirmed, like that she actually did hook up with Moon Boy. Now, the Gerald Dane conversation, when we originally had this topic come up, I looked at all of the moon symbolism and imagery around it and the association to maybe the others and different things. But when I heard this Gerald Dane piece, I thought, OK, what about of the night? And that's why people are saying Dark Star, right? They're talking about Gerald Dane. But what about, like, Dawn is described as being, isn't it like some pale, milky,
pale pink,
right? Kind of coloring, and almost like maybe like a moon glow or something. It's very different than Valyrian steel. And so, but it's called Dawn, right? So it's not called, it's yes. It's different. But I was trying to help, you know, make this work and sort of see some of the connections. But I don't know if he's connected to House Dane or not. I don't really see how that would work or where that's going to go, really, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's just, that's like, it just seems like a lot for me to say that he's of House Dane. I will say there is, and you can go watch our other video, you know, or listen to the podcast where we did a full sort of breakdown on Moon Boy. There's definitely something going on with him, even if it's just something where you can see Cersei's paranoia keep creeping in, because on more than one occasion, Moon Boy is just like briefly mentioned in like a paragraph where it's like Cersei's doing something. She's like, Moon Boy was there too. And then she immediately jumps to the Maggie the Frog like prophecy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sort of starts to think about that, which is kind of interesting. Like, he's pretty closely referenced on more than one occasion, like it's in multiple chapters.
Yeah.
And then of course Jaime thinks about him a lot, and he actually sort of thinks, well, it's Kettle Black, right, Lancel, and then Moon Boy, and then it just gets like shorter and shorter, and eventually he has a full-on dream of Moon Boy banging Cersei. So
right,
I mean, I think there's something there with him. He has, you know, I know he's not going to be a major character or anything, but I do think we will get like a resolution to his character. He's probably going to be killed in some sort of fashion during some big battle of King's Landing or something. Or maybe you find out that Olenna Tyrell has a bunch of spies, and then you find out that Moon Boy happens to be one of them.
Right.
But something, there's something going on with him, but I don't know that he's a Dane. I wouldn't say.
Yeah, but I think it wouldn't also, I mean, just because we don't really know who he would be reporting back to in House Dane, or how that would further sort of a House Dane kind of push. You know what I mean? Not saying that he's not. I mean, really, we have next to no evidence to go either way, like to put him in any house, I don't really think. So right. I get the whole of darkness and darkness being associated with the moon and all that kind of stuff, too. That's really where you can go. But I feel like he's an informant for someone, like he, not just himself, but like he is a lot of these people, like the Kettle Blacks are originally, it's a Baelish connection. And Baelish has sort of those like adult individuals who he's paying, whereas like Varys is using orphan children and Fleabottom and stuff like that. He's using his little birds. So different types of spy networks. And I feel like Moonboy might be more attached to someone like Baelish. You know, I hate to say that, but I mean, it might be the case, or just another great house in that area. So we'll have to kind of read and find out, but definitely going to be the undoing, I believe, of Cersei in a way, or even just Jaime. It's a big crack in his image of his sister. And it's as we were talking to Khaleesi, like a big shift for him where he's like, yeah, I'm out. And he's thinking about Brienne and she's thinking about him. It's really interesting to pay attention to what the characters think about, because whatever they're thinking about and dwelling on, like when we did Game of Thrones and Ned is thinking about certain individuals quite a bit in the Tower of Joy and stuff like that, and Hal and Reed and those things, what they think about matters, you know? And it's like, so Jamie's thinking about Moon Boy, thinking less of Cersei and more about Moon Boy and what maybe happened. Right. And also then more about Brienne. And so there's this big shift away. So it just could also be only that. That could be the only thing George is doing with it, but we don't really think so. We think there's definitely more going right. on. So
right. I'm just hoping for that. You know, the only thing I'm hoping for is that Cersei and Moon Boy only fans. So here that's
just could you imagine? Jesus.
Somebody just spat coffee out of their nose.
Yeah.
Network. Okay. All right. Switching gears here. Again, this is sort of high flying here. So this was one we did on the Horn of Winter. Okay. and who left it there. So I got a comment here from Red Laddie. The other thing that made me think it was she said, or I guess maybe these two go together, but I think this one's topic. So I've always thought it possible that book Cold Hands put the dragon glass there. So who left the Horn of Winter and the dragon glass cache, right? That we find, right. In A Clash of Kings when John and Ghost and everybody, and fist. We all find it right at the fist of the First Men.
Yep.
Says, who the dragon glass there, unlike Uncle Ben, Benjen, right? Who we don't know where he is. We do know Cold Hands is down there because he runs into the Sam and the First Man. The other thing that made me think it was Cold Hands was Ghost's reaction. You know, the way John describes the cold and it's terrible and abnormal. Ghost has seen the frozen dead before and didn't like them. He acted weird then too. I think Cold Hands could have even been there and shown Ghost where to look, or perhaps tell him to go see John. It seems like he is a skin changer as well with his connection to the elk.
Ooh, that's interesting, because he does have a connection with the elk. And again, we've always just thought about the ravens, that sort of the murder of ravens that is like kind of following, you know, him throughout the woods and stuff. So we think that's just Blood Raven, right? But I mean, maybe he's all in well connected, former student of Blood Raven. People believe in those types of things, like Euron being a student that didn't work out, then we should switch to Brand, but then you go way back to Cold Hands, who maybe had also a mission as well. I don't know. Because there's the whole friend reference, you know, he's definitely connected to Blood Raven. And so it's kind of a crazy thing to think he's a skin changer. That's actually pretty cool. And then really, if it's like, if you know, I just really struggle with this whole thing with the children of the forest creating in the show, creating the others, right? And then now they've got Blood Raven there, who he looks trapped. He looks like he can't get away. You know what I mean? Like he went there and maybe was ambushed. I don't know who's controlling who up there, my friend. You know, it's just like when I go back to this, and I did this years ago, but when Bran goes in and he asks if he's the three-eyed crow, and he's like, who? What are you talking about?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like whatever led him there is not necessarily the figure who he's learning from is not making the connection to the image that Bran is seeing. George is way too smart to not, like, it should have just been like, yes, right? You know, I understand, like, I am who you've been seeing. You finally made it, but it wasn't that easy. There's something else going on. And so I think, like, I don't know, Blood Raven really wants to be captured and tied to a tree and is like old. And like, maybe it's something that maybe it is a life preserving thing and he's cool with it and he's just dedicated to this cause, but he seems trapped in that cave and death is associated with that cave. So Cold Hands is dead and he seems like one of the whites or one of the others, but he says Blood Raven is a friend. I just think something else is going on. Melisandre sees him as the great other in the flames and this boy wolf there. I honest to God think Bran's in trouble up there. I'm not going to lie. And I don't know if anyone thinks that, but like, you guys have got to go check this out. You know, Matt, we had a lot of these conversations early in the podcast where it was like way back in the day. We didn't have
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
To following the subscribers and that kind of stuff, I kind of feel like we need to go back because
I'm down.
There's something wrong in the cave. It's not good. Jojen's gonna die. Jojen also is blindly following, I think, the same sort of thing. Like, I don't think he really, I think he's also a young boy being misled a little bit. We trust Jojen the same way we trust Melisandre. We're just like, we're like, yep, sure, that person has green sight. Sure, they can see into the flames. And it's like, I don't know that we should be trusting this young boy as much just because a few things are proved to be true. Like, he sees sort of the invasion or he sees the taking of Winterfell. That doesn't mean that everything he sees, like, he understands exactly. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. So, 100%. Yeah, and I'm with you, all right? And we did a bunch back in the day, and we actually did so much that people were like, all right, guys, it's time to switch to something else, because people just kept sending comments. And we're like, okay, well, we're going to talk about it. But yeah, we could definitely always revisit a lot of that stuff. Like, there's so much behind it too, like the difference of crows and ravens.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, right.
Big deal. And then Brennan Rivers is there, right?
Yeah.
And is he the three-eyed crow? Right. Yeah. Is the three-eyed crow, you know, there, then you have the great other, and then you have, you know, are they two different things? Is the three-eyed crow its own thing?
Right. Exactly.
I should real quick. I should just reference it's called the three-eyed crow in the books. It is called the three-eyed raven in the show.
Right.
It's the exactly. Just for separate, but sometimes we mix up and say both, but yeah, it's the three-eyed crow, and that is a difference, right? In the show, it's just whatever, but here it's crows and ravens, and they're different.
They are, man. And I don't even, you know, like, I don't like them. I don't trust them. They're tricksy birds, right? So they're tricksy birds. Let me just see real quick here. Brendan Rivers, like, you go in here, and I think the wiki's even a little bit, they stop short of saying that Brendan Rivers is like the three-eyed crow.
And then you have the last green seer. Well, that's, so which is it? Is he the last green seer or is it three-eyed crow?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Let me see if I can find the actual quote here for you guys, because this is something else, I think, because the wiki has him listed as like the three-eyed crow. And that when you get there, he's the last green seer and whatever. But that's not the way he responds when Bran asks him about it. No, in a Dance of Dragons. So let's go up here to Dance of Dragons. All the evil, all the bones and all the stuff that's associated with like death in there. I just don't, you know, And then Three-Eyed Crow is the one who's talking to Bran the whole way. He keeps seeing it, and it's all about opening your third eye or whatever. Let's see. Yeah, close your. Okay, let's go.
Yeah, it's. Yeah, I mean, and then you know, I got a picture pulled up here. Probably what it, I mean, a lot. There's a lot of fan art, and almost all the fan art looks like this sort of a thing, right? Is like Blood Raven's almost being like sucked into the wall. Like, are they feeding on him?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, why is he? It doesn't seem like pleasant. It doesn't seem like this is something that would be, you know, a good thing. He seems captured. He seems like he disappeared and didn't come back from arranging or something.
Right. Like Benjen probably did.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So there's something going on there. Let's see. Yeah, I'll have to find it for you guys. We'll have to do a whole other episode on that where it's just like it's kind of a mind-boggling thing. Yeah, because we haven't done one in a while, and it's always one of my favorite things just to go in and talk about, because there's just they're not the same. They're not the same person, I don't think. And I hope people already leave us comments on this and let me know what you guys think. Like do you find anything fishy or something that's not right up in the cave? More than, because I just don't like that Jojen, as young as he is, goes up here and this is his death. And he's just like going along with like, yeah, forcing my death. It's up there with this weird old guy who's the three-eyed crow, but like doesn't respond. Doesn't seem to even know who the three-eyed crow is when Bran asks about it. And it's like, so go read those chapters. It's in A Dance of Dragons, like one of the final, it's when he first meets Bloodraven. And you're like, okay, they move right past it. And I'm telling you, there's something wrong with that.
Yes, there is. Yeah, okay. So just, we'll maybe stay on this topic just a little bit. Let's try to see if there's any other really good comments.
We did have one. I wanted to read this. So this is you remember C-Star, who sends us also a lot of comments, right? This is on, if you want to, it's the Rhaegar. Above all, Rhaegar was able. Oh. Remember that video? So if you want to pull that one up, she's got one of the top comments on there. And I just think I've always thought this conversation is really good. You know, when we looked at, and again, people like it because it's the idea that Rhaegar is possibly still alive. And we did a great theory the other day on the elder brother and on the Quiet Isle and how that could possibly be one of the Martells. And I think it was, like Prince who was in the Kingsguard. Yeah. Martell. And that he died at the Battle of the Trident, but then washed downstream, was still alive, became the elder brother, this whole thing. And it all kind of fits into the story of Rhaegar, and is Rhaegar, you know, actually still alive, and is he Mance Rayder, who is also goes by Bale, you know, and then Abel. I don't know the whole theory. You guys can yeah, there it is. There's the code.
So I believe that Rhaegar was into some immortal life magic, the way Jon died and came back, as an example of what I think Rhaegar was looking for. What if he glamored someone else to look like him, fight Robert and die? Then Rhaegar went north to find the Children of the Forest. While there, he somehow, you know, became the Night King. I'm not as clever as George, but just sort of as a
just a
thought. And you know, we've definitely done a lot of videos on is Rhaegar. This was one of them, obviously. Is Rhaegar somebody else? Is he potentially still alive? For me, it's ultimately it always comes down to the rubies, right? Yeah. In that he dies on the Ruby Ford, which is, you know, named after that. And then we see the only other time we see rubies is in association with glamours. So
absolutely, Matt. The other thing is that, like, the elder brother story that we were talking about the other day, this theory, you guys can go look it up. We'll put a link for it. It's unbelievable because they talk about the rubies washing down and them being collected in some of these things, like people looking for them and just like looking for like armor that was like from the Battle of the Trident, all these different things. So it's just referenced again. And George, whenever he points to something again and says, yep, the rubies are back, or I talked about Rhaegar's rubies, and like he does it again and again to where it's just like, why the emphasis so much on it? And then you see later on, it's revealed that they have magical properties. Melisandre uses one, has one attached to her. Moonstones also are a big deal, or whatever else it is that like Bloodraven was using originally for his glamour. It's just, it's there, and it's subtle, but also it's repeated. Right. It's subtlety that's repeated over and over. And you're like, oh, we have to pay attention to that. So I've always thought there is something more to it. And it was a great sort of find, I guess, with the elder brother. Now, something else, another video here that we've talked a lot about Vale and Daenerys. So this is also kind of C-Star also kind of brought this up on a different video, same day, different comment. But she said, if you believe that Mance Rayder is Sir Arthur Dayne, then it makes sense that Val, probably short for Valyria, is the baby born of the Tower of Joy, making her Stark / Targaryen princess. Also, don't forget that the show combined character stories. So some of what happened to Jon in the show may actually happen to Aegon in the books, the same with Dany and Val. So it's just this whole idea that the Rhaegar storyline could continue on north. Val is still there. There's connections to just the way in which Rhaegar inspired people, and he was above all else able, and he was someone who could motivate and bring people together, and he was trying to do that at the tourney of Harrenhal. And if this guy then, if things didn't go right during Robert's Rebellion, is somebody who's in exile far north, and you have the connection with Vale, who looks very Targaryen or Valyria-like, right? We have babies, we have the king beyond the wall. I mean, like, just think about that. Like he's the king beyond the wall. He's there originally written in Game of Thrones. George thought about him a long time ago. Why wouldn't we have a guy like that who's in exile and who is fascinated with magical beings and stuff? His uncle is there. Like, he's got Bloodraven up there. He's got Aemon up there. There's more Targaryens at the wall than we realize. There's Targaryen loyalists up there. It seems like not the place that they would go or be, because we think of the Starks, but I'm telling you, more and more of them are up there than we realize. And it's like freaking Jon Snow's up there. So there's just a lot more going on that's subtle, that makes you go, holy smokes, that's the perfect place for them to kind of go into hiding. You know, we think about Essos and the Blackfyres and all this stuff where Dany and Viserys go over, and he's the beggar king and all this stuff. But there's a king beyond the wall. And it's just like, he was next in line. And right after Robert's Rebellion is when he kind of pops up there. Mance Rayder.
Yeah, I know. He appears so much in the first few chapters. Yeah, I'm definitely, for me, I just don't see, again, you know, we've talked about this thing a lot, but I know some people are on the idea that that Mance is Arthur Dayne, and then some people are on the idea that he's Rhaegar. To me, it makes way more sense that he's Rhaegar than Arthur Dayne, if that theory right is true at all. Yeah. Just because Corin seems to be more associated with Dawn and,
right,
you know, all of these things. And you begin to look at some of these characters that are up, that are potentially up there, and the oddities about them, right? I mean, Corin is like this ridiculously skilled swordsman. Everyone talks about how good he is. The knight, the wildlings fear him. Although, to be fair, the wildlings probably fear any, you know, Night's Watch member who has some sort of, would have any sort of, like, they would fear Jon if Jon didn't live the life. He's just a normal ranger, became a normal ranger. They'd probably fear him because he's was trained at a castle, so he's way more, you know, skilled than the other people are. But Corin isn't described as, he's not Sir Corin the Halfhand. He's just Corin the Halfhand. He's just a normal guy who's so skilled at fighting. Okay, there's something going on there.
Yeah.
Then Mance Rayder is like, there's way too much going on with him for it to not be like some weird thing. He's able to unite all these people. He like knows lords and ladies, sings about songs that have to do with Dorne, even though he's not just north of Dorne, he's above the wall. So he like seems to have this knowledge. And then for me, the big one, in all honesty, is Tormund, because Tormund makes no sense.
Yeah.
Tormund, if you go look at his, and I'll get and credit to go Order of the Green Hand has a really good video on it. They have a really, really good video on it that Tormund is someone else where they break down the whole thing. And you can go look at, you know, other people have done stuff on it too. I think Alt Shift X has one on it too. But talking about Tormund and his speech, like sometimes he talks and he sounds like a wildling, and then sometimes he talks, but his like dialogue sounds like something that you like M'lady, right? It's like he says things that you just wouldn't say if you were a wildling. Go look at other random wildling speech. And then it's almost like he, after he'll say that, his next line is like a dick joke or something, as if he has to like overcorrect for what he just said.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. To cover it up or something, right? And it's sort of like it's like, yeah.
This is all obviously book torment. Like Show Torment is a very different character. Very different. Very different. Show Torment is awesome. But they're very different. Because Book Torment is a lot older too.
Yeah, and it just makes you think like what Matt's saying is there's some suspicious characters up there, right? Some big characters that are beyond the wall that are close to Mance, that maybe have gone out and have their own missions, agendas. And again, time's gone on. Maybe they part ways or there's some sort of separation, because Corrin and Mance definitely were once brothers, and there's some respect between them, but maybe they had different ideas on what to do. Tormund's interesting. And it's just like, what this whole cast of characters up there, they feel like there's more to them than meets the eye. And there's something kind of suspicious about them, you know? And we just don't know much about the wildlings, and we're instantly meant to like distrust them and not believe that they're significant or that they matter that much, because they're just beyond the wall and they're dismissible. But I just we like to kind of point it out, because that's what George is trying to do. That's what he loves to do, that, right? Is to sort of say, no, I've laid the breadcrumbs there the whole time. And if you go back and read it again, you can kind of find them.
Yeah. Crazy. So. Crazy. Okay. Any more, Ez, that you have that you're specific? Yeah,
you got one? Okay. I do. Yeah. I'm gonna share my screen here actually with you. Tell me if you can see that. Does that pop up? Okay. So we have, this is again Ashley. This is on the Horn of Winter. And I don't know if we've read this or not. This was just this was again 3 weeks ago, but I felt like if you read this tinfoil bit, I thought it was really good. So if we've already covered it, I'm sorry.
No, that but we did just I referenced one from that same video.
From that video. Okay. So Ashley says, I've always suspected Benjen stashed the dragon glass, by the fist. Yeah, at the Fist of the First Men. The description of the cloak did it for me. The condition of it sounded a lot like Benjen's clothes and were described during the Winterfell Feast in A Game of Thrones. So I like the theory that Benjen intercepted the horn from wildlings who found it. Tinfoil thought his group was attacked by wights and he was the lone survivor. Having been rescued by Cold Hands, he was taken to Bloodraven's cave, where he resided until Bloodraven dispatched him to bury the catch en route to Winterfell, where he was to covertly serve as the Stark in Winterfell. By the end of A Clash of Kings, there was no Stark left there, because Bran and Rickon had left after Ramsay sacked the castle. By covertly, I mean as the Hooded Man in Winterfell. On a brief aside, if true, it opens the door to Benjen, former First Ranger, potentially rescuing Mance Rayder, the King Beyond the Wall. Given the historic enmity between the Watch and the Wildlings, I think this scenario is really cool and gets to the heart of characters putting aside petty hostilities to focus on the real threat, the impending Long Night. So I thought this was really good, man, because the idea here is that, like, he has a connection to Bloodraven. You understand why the show maybe did the Benjen Cold Hands thing, even though it's supposedly been confirmed by George that they're not the same character, but maybe they were closely associated in the notes, and that's what the showrunners got, with some close association. And so if Bloodraven knows there's no Stark in Winterfell, because he's, again, somehow, possibly, watching or guiding Bran north, and knows that Rickon is also gone, and you need that, maybe that's also why there's such a stirring, or, you know, the Fist of the First Men sort of happens right away, and that's why Benjen's on his way to be that Stark, to stop whether it's some magical thing or it's blood magic, or who knows what it is, but having Stark blood in Winterfell matters for some reason. It seems to be a big thing. There's tons of theories around it. So he's on his way there, but the others are stirring, and it's caused them to kind of, like, you know, I don't know, mass produce or really reemerge, because they've been dormant for so long. It's like, what is it that's caused them to kind of do this? Is it the fact that the Starks have been rooted out and they're all away, and Winterfell is in disarray? So if they're on the way, if he's on his way back, that's pretty cool that he would take up the seat there. And then the real cool connection is that, like, the reason Bran and Rickon aren't there is because of Theon. Theon's the reason that they're not there. And if the hooded guy is there in the Theon chapter and kind of calls Theon, I think he referenced him as a kinslayer. And as people wonder, is he a ghost? Is he real? Like, who is this person? So he's there, and it's just kind of interesting. It's an interesting connection to Theon, I guess, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah. Good. Yeah. I mean, so all at the end of the day, do we think it was just left there? Do we think it was, it feels fresh.
Very fresh. Yes, exactly. Exactly. So it's almost like, either Benjen buried it there in haste and was going to take it back, or it feels like it's too much of a coincidence. You know what I mean? It feels like Cold Hands dropped it there, or Benjen did it, and then Benjen was on his own secret. See, because the reason Benjen wouldn't go back to the Night's Watch would be exactly what Ashley said there, is that he's had some interaction with Bloodraven or something that's told him, okay, I need to go covertly back through the wall and be in Winterfell for some reason. He has why wouldn't he just, if he's right there, that, like, next to the Fist of the First Men, why wouldn't he announce himself and just come up and say, I'm back, I'm good? So,
yeah. And it's like, and he goes, like, the thing is, he goes missing almost right away. Mm-hmm. Right. And really the only thing that we could see that would be an issue for Benjen is, we know, you know, that Waymar Royce, right, and the other two guys whose names I always forget. They were just killed by another, because we see it in the prequel, in the prologue. That's the word I'm looking for. So the prologue, right? Gren, I think is right of his name, right? Or whatever. But anyway, they get killed.
Right.
And then the one flees south, who gets beheaded by Ned, and then like three or four chapters later, Benjen's missing. He hasn't come back.
Yeah.
Like, what? So something happens within that space, that small, you know, little block of chapters, that causes him to either he gets killed, attacked, or he decides, I have to go do something else that's so important that I have to pretty much almost abandon the Night's Watch.
Yeah, and it's like in some weird way, he's going to still think he's serving the Night's Watch, because he's an honorable kind of character like that, but he's given a different purpose, and he's on some long-term sort of mission. Corin says too, you know, like, the old powers are waking, and so if Benjen realizes that, it's like, yeah, this is still for the Watch. What he's doing is still for the Watch, but he's got information from someone. Because I think he's alive. I totally think he's alive. There's just no reason not to just have found his corpse, or to George just doesn't do that. I don't know, where it's just like, yeah, we never found him, and he's still missing, and it's a mystery. It matters. It's going to come back somehow. And again, it has to have been in the show note. I always go to, like, in the show, they were given some notes. And so for some reason, they decided to make, you know, Benjen Cold Hands. Yeah. So there's a strong association between the two.
There's some, I don't think Benjen is Cold Hands, but I do think that, agree with you. There's some sort of association with them. I think they did it as like a fan theory. But the thing about it, though, is, in order to do that, remember, the guy who plays Benjen is only in like two episodes.
Mm-hmm.
They bring him back like many years later.
Yes.
There's not many characters that actually did that like came back.
Right.
You know, you have to keep these actors, all this stuff. I mean, look how many times, you know, whatever was recast.
The
Mountains were cast like three times. You know, I mean,
Dario, and yeah,
Bear, so. Beric Dondarrion.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it is interesting that he's back and that they decided to do that. I just think there's something there, and so I love the comments that you mentioned earlier with the horn and Cold Hands, and then Ashley's comment here with Benjen. And there being a connection to Bloodraven somehow, definitely in that cave.
Awesome. Awesome. So. All right, guys. Well, hey, thank you guys for leaving us all these comments on YouTube. We appreciate it. It's super great, because I love to be able to just dive in and respond to them. You know, we used to do Fallout Friday as so much fun when everybody sent us Ravens. I'm sure Fallout Friday will be back when House of the Dragon comes. And we have a ton of House of the Dragons comments to get to as well. I just thought maybe we'll just kind of main A Song of Ice and Fire live dive this into. But yeah, so as always, thank you guys for watching. Thank you guys for listening. Be sure to check out all of our other shows and content as well, right? You can do so by checking out Apple Podcasts. I think it's probably the easiest way because it has all there in a list. We talk Wheel of Time, Star Wars, Harry Potter. Ez and I are on TikTok, by the way, just like blowing it up. You can find me anywhere on TikTok and anywhere on the internet at Super Gains Bros. You can find Ez on TikTok at Hyperspace Hangout, which is the name of our Star Wars podcast. Anywhere else on the internet at WompRat_2. And be sure to check out all of our extended and extra content on Patreon and Apple Podcast Premium. And as always, guys, we will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.